This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast, brought to you by Sysco. Sysco is here to help set you up for success by delivering high-quality foods, products, and services for your restaurant. Recording live to digital from the NCF&B studios in downtown Raleigh. Join us as we lead you into the kitchen, inside the bottle, and into the minds of the food and beverage industry. And now, could we have more time? We haven't even looked at our menus. It's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And supersonically coming east is Chef Eric Rivera and his buddy, pal, friend, CEO of Beat, Emily Wilcher.
Hello.
I think it's a little bit more serious than buddy, pal, friend. I mean, we've been like together partner style for a while. So
I just think the partner thing is so cliche.
It's all good.
Like in this new world of, you know, not having titles and stuff.
Yeah.
Just like my buddy.
More intertwined, more connected.
Yeah. Your heart.
Yeah. Like the
your
little,
soulmate.
The circle hand with the other finger going through it, but like really sly. Yeah, that kind of shit.
That. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad we got
a little bit more serious.
You know,
I think
it's when a man loves a woman.
Yeah, it's like, but not
it's
that
so
song.
Traditional.
I don't want to hear
not
that song.
That fucking lovers.
Don't have me hear that song.
I think of like Will Ferrell and is it like Sherry O'Terry in the hot tub?
Yeah.
Hello, lover.
Yeah. And then we just like talk weird things and we also cook pho in there at the same time.
Yeah. So it's like the one thing you're formal about is like, no, we are man and woman together.
I'm sorry. How many women? Man,
just one.
Yeah. No, that's it. You know, we're together and stuff. It's cool.
Cool.
Nice. Yeah.
So conventional and old school.
Yeah. Love it.
But what's not conventional and old school is your approach to food. Hey,
I know.
What about that for a segue? So for those that don't know Chef Eric Rivera out here in the old Triangle or in the North Carolina area, it's because you're a recent transplant.
Yeah.
I've only been here for what, 2 months?
They just dropped us off at the corner.
Yeah.
So we were like, there's somebody do you want to sign for this? And nobody signed. No, so we're stuck.
Yeah. So brand new to town, but coming from most recently Seattle, but you've kind of been all over the world, all over the country.
Yeah.
Your lineage hails from mm-hmm. Puerto Rico.
Yeah. So I my parents are from Puerto Rico. I grew up here. I was the first person in my family was born here. My parents had me on an army base. Mm. They just drop us off there too. And you know, I was there
one.
And grew up in Olympia, Washington, and went up through Seattle, been around the world a few times working in kitchens and doing all that jazz. And we've been on tour for the past year and a few months, all around the United States, cooking in like LA, San Francisco, DC, Philly,
Palm Springs,
everywhere. Like everywhere for the
Nashville,
past year and a few months. So
everywhere.
Now we're here, we landed in Raleigh.
So on tour, explain that to us.
So kind of like, you know, if we were like a band, but like with food, and then
a food band.
We show up to your house, and we sing songs until you want us to go away, and we're done cooking.
Feed you a lot
go,
of macaroni and cheese, and then bye.
Yeah, bye guys. Is this Kia C? No, Kia Cheese? All right, cool. But basically, we have been cooking. You know, I do either pop-ups for like a larger group of people or individual things at their home. Mm-hmm. Or it's just, you know, places and spaces that I kind of get into and then, you know, have people over. I make them food anywhere from, you know, 5 to 7 course family style thing to like 20 course tasting menus to everything in between. Mm-hmm. The format's really wide. It's always been that way for me. So I just kind of, whatever excuse I can get to cook for people and have them like eat food and shit, that's kind of like all I care about. Like,
well, and I'm being a little facetious because I was one of those people. You,
you cooked
for my wife and my pal Kip and Katie. They're also a couple, you know, the conventional style.
Conventional.
Alicia and I are married.
Also partners. Conventional.
Old partners. School. It was 3 couples in this house, two
modern.
Of which were serving us food and drink and all. But no, it was great and it was very mm-hmm. intimate. So we were in this cool place. You had kind of like a mid-century mm-hmm. modern look mm-hmm. feel to the house that you were like renting right now, I guess, that you just got. Mm-hmm. And it's cool. It's in a really nice little neighborhood. And we walked in and I had no idea that it was going to only be the four of us. I think, well, Felicia took care of all the tickets and all that stuff. So I didn't really see, mm-hmm. I didn't know anything.
Yeah.
But I even told her, I'm like, that's fine. I don't want to know anything. I just want to experience it how it is. So even that was my first question to you. I was like, so who else is coming? And you're like, it's just you.
Just you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. Well, then here we are. And so we sat down and Emily, you brought us three and then four bottles of wine,
oh, yeah,
which was nice, to, and just kind of left them there for our disposal, kind of
for your drinking pleasure.
For our drinking pleasure, yeah, and went from there. And then we proceeded to get, I mean, I don't know, it was maybe like, yeah, like maybe eight courses or so, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Served family style while we were watching Chef Eric cook from his kitchen, kind of like an open kitchen format. So yep, we were sitting right there and we were watching it and having conversation along the way. I was talking conspiracy theories about China and all that. Well,
as you do.
As I do. And we had this great meal. And it was, yeah, it was like super intimate. It was just like just going over to a friend's house. But
yeah,
where did that kind of come from? I mean, that's not a typical way of doing business.
It really isn't. So I had a restaurant in Seattle. It's kind of like my first one. I've helped people open restaurants. I've worked in the highest of high kitchens all around, you know. I was,
yeah, let's set a basis for that. You worked in Alinea.
Yeah.
So anybody who's listening to this show likely knows what Alinea is.
Yeah.
Grant Ackett's place in Chicago, yeah, three, yeah, Michelin stars, etc.
Ackett's Light Pockets.
Yep. Yeah, man. I was the director of culinary for the group for 3.5 years. So
yeah,
I worked for Alinea Next Aviary. I was like R&D, our lead of all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When he traveled, I traveled, like all this crazy shit. So it was like a really,
yeah,
cool,
so
thing.
You didn't just like go to a Holiday Inn Express and then wake up and like,
no,
start cooking.
No, no. I didn't come up with my little, you know, fucking easy bake oven and show up. No, it was a little bit more serious than that. I applied myself 97% this time and look what happened, Mom.
Right.
Wow.
But no, it's been really cool, man. It's kind of going around there. And then when I worked at Alinea, we traveled around a lot, you know, going to Europe and Japan and like literally all around the world all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes like secret shopping places and people, you don't know I was there, you know, so kind of seeing all these formats and templates and all these different ways of dining. I think a lot of it got kicked out for me when I was like, man, you can open this restaurant, you can do these things and have X amount of people in here. But how many of these people are you actually really entertaining, talking, mm-hmm, to, interacting with, seeing? Because even at Alinea, you know, we had moved from 86 guests a night to over 100, doing 20 courses per person.
Yeah.
That's insane, right? You have people that are coming in there spending a few thousand dollars to eat. And if they don't get a chance to see the chef, or if they don't get a chance to meet Grant, if they don't get a chance to like feel all the way, whatever, it's kind of a letdown for them when they spend a couple thousand dollars.
Yeah.
So that was part of it. Plus, when pandemic hit, you know, I'd had my restaurant open for about 10 months, mm, and then pandemic hit.
Right.
Yeah, in Seattle.
Yeah.
So they shut everything down. And so I was like, well, fuck. You know, so I moved to delivery, takeout, all this kind of stuff. And so while I was kind of like getting to the point of like reopening when everybody's starting to get vaccinated, I said, you know, I'm going to have this more intimate style that I want. I don't want 40 people, 20 people, whatever, in my restaurant. I want 2, 6, 4. Because I'd gone to ryokans in Japan. And it's really that kind of style. Mm-hmm. I've gone to private dinner clubs in Japan. It's really kind of that style. There's like 4 or 6 people and they're kind of tending to 2 or 4 people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck, that's rad. Mm. You know, and I'm like, if I'm going to come out of this pandemic and then go into restaurant, do I even need a restaurant? Do I even need all these things that typical hospitality people say I have to have? No, fuck no. Because at the end of the day, like my cooking style doesn't require or doesn't need 15 fucking unpaid people.
Yeah.
Or 13 stages staring at me going, chef, we've peeled the onions. What do we do now? I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, put them on the goddamn pass and let me plate this shit for the next 12 and a half hours.
He's lying. He had about 8 people that, yeah, were just sitting there in the kitchen the whole time.
Sweeping the floor. Yeah. Crumbing your table.
Yeah, that was
absolutely
so poor.
Yeah, that was the fun house mirrors I installed. They were all just me.
Oh, my God.
They're all my multiple personalities. But
I'm
no,
also
it's,
one of those personalities.
It's kind of one of those things where, you know, I started off kind of doing this model of like, I can serve, I can talk about the wines, I could do all this stuff. This was solely just me in Seattle. And then I just like kind of devised this tour because I got presented with a lease renewal on the place I was at, and it was 19% more. Ugh. And I took the paper and I threw it right back at him. I said, fuck you guys, I'm out. You know, there's no fucking way in hell. Like, I had never missed a payment. I'd, you know,
after getting out of pandemic, they tried to charge 19% more.
This is a year into the pandemic. So this is while it was going on. I didn't have any problems. I wasn't negotiating shit. Like, I was still paying my stuff. And they were like, yeah, this is where the market's at. And I'm like, you know, the market's at. Fuck you. I'm out.
That sounds like they wanted to put up like more high rises or something. Like, they
no,
just
no, it's a brand new building too.
With high rises on top of it.
Yeah, yeah. It's yeah, a 1,000 unit, yeah, building, like all brand new.
So just out of curiosity, yeah, is there a restaurant space in that space now?
No, nobody's been there since I left. Yeah, and it's like, been over a year. So anyway, fuck them.
Yeah.
No, so it's just one of these things I kind of devised, like, what's the worst case scenario I can kind of get myself into? What's the best case scenario I can get myself into? How long do I need to ride this out? My last career before this was in business and finance.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was younger, in my mid-20s when 2008 collapse happened. I was in that stuff. And yeah. So I had to hand back keys and cars and all this other stuff. And I said, I never want to be in this position again. So then I went to culinary school. I did all this stuff. And I said, even if things suck, I could still make ramen out of my car and it's going to be baller.
Yeah.
You know, so that here we are now. And I can make ramen and back of my car, and it's baller.
It's really fucking baller.
And then, you know, Emily, we come along together and we make an awesome team, and we're here. And, you know, it's a very small thing, but intimate, cool, fun, really unique. I mean, the menus even change from 5 p.m. to 8:30, you know, completely different. And,
okay.
You know, like, I'll give you an example. Like, a couple nights ago, I did, for a guest of mine who's been in a bunch of times, I did Puerto Rican dim sum. It was 17 courses, like all fucking railed out. And he was just like, what the fuck is this? You know? And I'm like, nah, man, I grew up in Seattle and there's incredible dim sum. There's incredible regional Chinese food. I grew up around that. I grew up around that more than I did with Puerto Rican food. So I have, you know, I did like Puerto Rican pork shumai. I did Puerto Rican beef shumai. I did all these like noodle dishes and all this. You know, he was like, this is fucking insane. I'm like, nah, it's just fun. Like, that's the way it should be.
And there's one dish that you will repeat.
The flan.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's more like culturally specific, kind of like a fuck you dish, because a lot of people have had flan. It's okay. The one that you guys had was really soft. I was trying something different night.
I was actually really impressed. I've had so much flan in my life, and it's usually like rubbery and kind of gross. That was one of the most memorable courses of the night.
Thank you.
It's life changing.
It was
awesome. Life changing.
Yeah. So it's
and it was just flan. Like, no offense. It's like, you're just eating flan.
You just need to put flan in a tube.
It's flan. It's flan. Yeah.
It's big. It's heavy. It's wood.
Is that what that was?
Or envy? I don't know. Ben Stiller, Jack Black.
Yeah. I thought we were doing the log thing from Ren and Stimpy.
Yeah.
That's
what I was thinking.
Yeah. Flan. Flan. It's big. It's wood. Better than bad. It's good.
Oh, my God.
Everybody wants a flan.
Up next, Ren and Stimpy themed dinner.
Yeah. So the flan thing, I mean, there's a lot of like little subtle touches that I like to do, whether it's like kind of more simple stuff or more extravagant, or even just like, you know, can I write a menu or do a menu or cook a menu that's like got more than one cool thing in it? You know, and I think that's kind of fun for me. Because I sometimes play down presentation. Sometimes I play up presentation. Sometimes I'm playing kind of to the person. Some, you know, halfway through a menu a couple of days ago, I had some guests in there from Chicago. And they're like, hey, you know, I know you're going to be doing stuff out here. You ever thought about doing a Hebrew burrito? I'm like, well, no, not really. You know,
I made a burrito.
Oh my God, that'd be awesome.
That would be really good.
That should be fucking good.
Oh, that's what I thought you said. That's what I thought you were saying.
No.
Like gefilte fish inside of like, I don't know.
Oh my God. I would love that.
I think we just created something.
That's fucking awesome. It's just like really nice, thinly sliced gravlax, and it's like really kind of, oh my fuck yeah.
Wow.
Papers.
Wow.
Oh my God. This is brilliant. I love it. I'm into it.
All right.
I'm into it. Yeah, I'll make
next
that.
Time you do
you know
it.
What?
Yeah.
I'll make that free.
When we go
come on
today.
Over. I got you.
Awesome.
I got you. I got you. Because I've made gefilte fish and it's awesome, man.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's so good.
Wow.
No, a Hebrew burrito. It's a dish. It's basically like twice fried plantain and then there's like a little sandwich in between it. The sandwich bun is the plantains.
Okay. Yeah.
And it originated in Puerto Rico and then it got over into Chicago. And so in Chicago it's a big deal. And so the guy was just like sitting there and I'm like, you know, I've got enough shit here to make it. I'll make it for you right now. So I had a smoked pork Hebrew burrito I made him. And he was like, fuck, man, this is crazy.
Fucking
and
awesome.
It wasn't even planned. It was just like, I got it.
Yeah. That, you know? That's the environment that I felt like while we were there. We were just kind of like talking and we're talking about wine or we're talking about food. And it just kind of felt like you're riffing. I mean, you have a plan, mm-hmm. but it also felt like it could go wherever, like almost improv, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you could go where you want to go, choose your own adventure. We were just, we were bullshitting like, Emily, you're a guitarist. I'm a guitarist. You're mm-hmm. like, oh, check out my guitar. And we're like playing that and mm-hmm. like just hanging out. It was just, it's a cool vibe.
It's like having friends over.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it's like.
Definitely. Okay, so Emily, let's bring you into the fold.
Okay, sure.
For one, how did you meet this young man over here?
Oh, I slid into Eric's DMs during the pandemic. so I used to be an epidemiologist and a dietitian. And during the pandemic, Eric was really loud about how restaurants should not be reopening. And I thought that was really wonderful. So I sent him a message encouraging him to continue saying those things because he has a platform that will listen to him. And he ended up getting a ton of press for it. And also, actually, revealed a lot about the exploitation in the food industry at the same time. And we just kind of kept in touch. And then one night I was like, hey, man, can I come over? That was it.
And the rest is history.
The rest is, yeah, history. So
interesting.
Interesting, yeah. So, but basically because of the way his like values aligned with, you know, what public health was saying at the beginning of the pandemic. Because I worked in the Washington State Department of Health right at the beginning of everything, right where we thought patient zero was, essentially. So.
And now you aren't in the health space at all?
I mean, I'm still technically an epidemiologist. I'm still technically a dietitian, but yep. No, I don't work in those fields. I still see some clients from time to time.
Okay.
But no, I don't because the pandemic response and the national and international reactions to it showed me that public health is kind of fucked. Not because public health itself is bad, but because the funding is really not there to support what is necessary for making public health function well. And I would be fighting an uphill battle for the entirety of my career, plus all the burnout, plus all of the like trauma that people in my field are suffering from because of the pandemic. And it's just not a world that I want to save.
So I want to hear more about the world you're going to save. And also you're the CEO of a new company that you guys are establishing called Beat.
Yes.
But one thing that does keep the pulse of the world going, and there's a lot of public health question.
Okay.
It's kind of like Max. It's back and forth. It's coffee.
Matt, you just think I'm so wishy-washy.
Coffee.
By the way, everyone, I'm going to be a Saints fan for 1 year. That's what, I'm just saying this out loud.
Listen, I'll be honest. It's a good... Okay, so one thing. I went to college in Louisiana.
Yeah.
So being a Saints fan is actually fucking awesome.
Where'd you go?
LSU.
LSU.
So the cool thing about like that area, food is incredible. People are fucking awesome.
I created my oldest daughter in New Orleans.
Well, good.
Congratulations.
See, we have a tie here.
He magically created her. It was like Geppetto
like a
with
stork?
The Pinocchio. Yeah.
Yeah. But the cool thing is
she's
like...
She's a real girl.
The best part about being a Saints fan is you always have like food to fall back on.
Right.
So when they're being the Aints, you can still have some good food.
Yeah.
You know, and you're good, man. You're in a good spot.
Because Derek Carr, my boy, was Raider, was unceremoniously let go games before the end of the season. So I'm still going to root for the Raiders. It's fine. They're still fine. But I'm definitely rooting for the Saints as well. They're my NFC team.
As you may have heard earlier in the show, Cisco is proud to be the title sponsor of the NCFMB podcast, bringing plenty of fresh ideas to the table.
As the global leader in food and non-food distribution, you'll get to hear from their executive chefs, get unique recipe ideas, and learn more about who they are as a company and the impact they make on our local community.
Cisco has locations all around the nation, making sure products are fresh and locally sourced where possible, ensuring all your favorite restaurants have the best ingredients and access to a diverse assortment of products.
Plus, hear about all the benefits Cisco can bring to your business, as the global brand also provides industry-leading restaurant solutions to help customers succeed in this fast-paced and challenging food service industry. From menu design services to one-on-one consulting, Cisco is there to help make sure business is always coming through your doors.
Cisco is the global leader in selling and distributing food and non-food products to restaurants, healthcare and educational facilities, lodging establishments, and other customers all around the world, 90 countries to be exact.
In this month's episodes, we'll be sharing more tidbits from Cisco, from culinary insights to the company's impact on our community, and so much more.
Cisco, providing you a full plate of service since 1969.
Anyhow, that had nothing to do with Joe Van Gogh coffee that Matt was trying to
but now we're
cleverly
back.
Now we're back.
To bring in. But guess what? Our listeners don't need clever, seamless transitions.
We had a coffee break. To talk about the Raiders.
And in the meantime, I took a sip of the coffee.
Mm. And what'd you think?
It's actually pretty fucking good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Talk about a testimonial.
It tastes like shit.
Yeah. No.
It's actually really good.
And we're, you know, from Seattle, so we know a thing.
That's true.
Tattoo on my arm.
Wow. People, it's going to be tough to beat
out. So what is she drinking, Max?
We're drinking the Colombian Jose Urbano Microlot.
Oh, wow.
Which is, you know, fantastic. As Joe Van Gogh would say. It's got tasting notes of plum, lemon zest, and milk chocolate. This is coming from Nariño, Colombia. Right. High elevation.
Yeah, it's good.
And like a light roast. So you do get a lot of the flavors out of there. It's not overly done. And you know what I also like? If you buy your coffee online from Joe Van Gogh, you can also select how you want that coffee to come to you, because you can obviously go whole bean. But if you don't have a grinder at home and you like a preferred method, you can get it ground it with AeroPress or drip, French press, home espresso, pour over, or as we've done it here with the Chemex. So it's kind of a nice alternate, you know, or alternative way and hospitality kind of driven style by grinding it perfectly for you, for your style of brewing coffee. So go to joevango.com to learn more, to get your coffee, and then check them out. They've got locations all over the triangle.
Thanks. I like the name in there too, because that's my middle name, Jose.
Oh.
So I'm like, you know, from a Jose to another Jose, Jose B, and see that in the checkout cart and go buy that later.
Ooh,
wow.
Yeah.
What a
look
slick
at you
transition.
Go.
Hey.
That was fucking
very nice. No, that coffee's good, man.
It is. It's really good.
It's really nice and subtle, and it doesn't finish like astringent or bitter. It's just really nice.
It's delicious.
I mean, you did pour over too, which is why it's even better.
Yeah.
And even straight with nothing in it, it's solid.
Yep.
You know, a little bit of, even if you wanted cream or a tiny bit of sugar, he doesn't really need it, but if you wanted to, there it is.
All right.
Chef notes.
I know, I get excited. Hey, man, come on.
Appreciate it.
That's what I'm here for.
You guys can serve it after dinner at your pop-ups.
You know what, actually, this is be good, because when I'm chefing hardcore for real,
yeah,
I get all crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you guys have ever done it. The cool thing with coffee like this, drip coffee, it would be really good with soda water and ice.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just solid, because then it takes away the astringency and bitterness from it. And it's easy to drink without any sugar or anything else. And so that's a little chef move.
Eric created the coffee program at a bunch of different places.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
So do that. Yeah, do that.
You know, well, since St. Patty's Day is this Friday, we're probably recording and releasing out of order, so who cares, but it's already probably happened. But just a little thing that's fun. I was listening to a podcast about coffee and Irish coffee and liquor and like kind of where it was created. There's a couple of different stories about where it possibly was created, but I like the one that says it was created at the Buena Vista in San Francisco where my brother proposed to his wife.
That's adorable.
Cool. So there's a little connection to my family there.
The Buena Vista Winery?
No, the Buena Vista Cafe.
Oh,
it's a bar in San Francisco. It's been there for years. But the cool technique that I really liked, and when I got home, I had to do it. I knew it was available. I just hadn't specifically done it. Was the way they do their cream, their whipped cream. So you get they use Tullamore Dew as their whiskey.
Mm.
They do 2 ounces of that, and then they French press their coffee and they pour it over it as well. But with the whipped cream, which is cool, is they take heavy whipping cream and they take 2 cubes of sugar in a shaker, in a bar shaker, and they use those cubes in lieu of like ice, let's say, and they just give that a hard shake, real nice. So I did that when I got home. I was like hard shaking, boom, 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 boom. You pop it, it's delicious, easy, already sweetened whipped cream, and then you just pour it right over.
Mm.
Oh,
it's an Irish coffee.
Yeah, it sounds delicious.
Yeah, it's that's the way to go. So a little treat for you guys. Do that when you get home.
If you want to agitate it quicker without ice in it, and to do that whip with a thing and a shaker, dried beans.
Ooh,
oh, just throw some beans in there.
So
dried beans in there. Shake the shit out of it.
And then it gets like a little coffee flavor in it too.
Yeah.
Nice.
Okay.
Little coffee
beans. Keep
bean.
It going.
Coffee
it going.
Beans. And it's really nice. No, it's really solid, man. That's a good
one. You guys are going to have some good Irish coffee.
I like it.
Also, just the connection to Alinea. Normally the book is here, but it's not now because I'm letting my bartender buddy borrow it. But the aviary.
Yeah, aviary is solid, man.
The cookbook, the bartending book. Unbelievable, by the way. The joke that I always make with this book, though, is it's so impressive and so beautiful, but it's also really freaking hard. Like,
It's not for you guys.
Right.
It's not
how
for home.
How are we going to do any of the things
it's impossible.
That are in this menu?
Unless you have a Kleinbell, unless you have super chillers, unless you have a rotostatic, you know, homogenizer, rotary evaporator, you know, endless kinds of things, custom silicone molds, all this, you know, it's... You know, down there in the ice room. Do you have an ice room? I don't think so. You know, it sounds crazy.
Between ice rooms,
but that was the whole design of the place, and that is supposed to be basically Alinea's bar program.
Yeah,
and that was the gist of it. And so, like, well, you have all these crazy people and equipment and all this kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at one time, you know, when Micah really got into it, and he was the main chef there for, you know, it was chefs running it, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're bartenders, but they're chefs,
you know, 19 to 20 something different types of ice and all this crazy stuff, and then the office downstairs where it has like the most bespoke like chartreuse collection, and again there's all these like different layers to it that was really cool.
That's
was
where
the chartreuse collection because of you?
The ice, fine, but like,
no,
do you know chartreuse? What's going on?
Yeah, yeah, the monks are
taking a break.
Yeah, that's the kind of shit, man. Like, they have old school bottles, like from early 1900s, 1800s, you know, all the way through. They have orange chartreuse. Like, it's literally color orange on purpose. You know, they have all these, like, one-off bottles that we're getting from, like, estate sales and just finding people that have half bottles.
Max, I think I've told you this, and I know you're going to get to what's going on, but I think I've maybe even mentioned this on the show before. My grandfather was, like, a candy importer on my dad's side.
Oh, God, I love that.
And there was, at some point, and I have to dig more into the story now with my dad, but he was an importer in New York City for chartreuse.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
That's really
what
cool.
A legend.
So, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but so chartreuse though is like kind of going
it's going away.
It's in the
they're
headlines.
They're taking a break.
So yeah. So essentially what their kind of thing, and they sent a letter to all of their distributors basically saying, like, from the monks.
Yeah.
Basically saying, like, hey, we're not going to, it's gotten off. People are so excited about it. More people want it. We're not going to do that. Mm-hmm. We have to maintain our own lifestyle and the way that we want to do things. And their main focus is being monks.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, that's a really cool thing to be able to sell. That's a really cool point to be able to get to in any sort of business where you're like, I'm good.
I mean, isn't that kind of what you're doing, essentially?
Yeah, sort of, kind of, yeah. I'm still in kind of panic mode all the time.
I mean, that's just me. I think that's just how it is sometimes.
Isn't this like I know this is like the business side mm-hmm. of me, the evil business side.
Sure, sure.
But isn't somebody there who's like a really good distiller or brewer or maker of mm-hmm. beverages thinking about, like, okay, so how does every great cocktail program now make a last word or have chartreuse? Yeah. Like, what are we going to use? So, like,
that's the
next thing to create that, like, rivals or somewhat imitates the flavor betters it.
It really, that thing is, chartreuse is so unique. Mm-hmm. It's impossible.
I know.
It's literally impossible. It's one of those funky things where it's like, if somebody tries to make chartreuse again or Fernet or, you know, even, hey, Chicago, Malort, everybody still has that.
Like, Malort.
Malort. Everybody has and knows exactly what that tastes like before they even make a cocktail or mm-hmm. put it into something else. Some of the best cocktails I've ever had a little touch of chartreuse, yellow or green or any of the other versions. Even straight up, I'm like, man, you want something, here you go. Like, one of my favorite chartreuse cocktails, and this is from Charles Jolie. He's a world-renowned bartender. He does the drinks for, like, the Oscars, and, I mean, this guy is, like, he's incredible. We were out in a bar once in Brooklyn, and he goes, hey, do you want to try something cool? And I'm like, yeah. So he pulls out this Spanish-style Peron. You, like, pull it away from your face and drink with it.
Yeah.
And fills it 50-50 mezcal and green chartreuse. Holy fucking shit. It is so good.
Well, you know, my go-to drink is the mezcal last word. Mm. Like, if I'm getting a cocktail. So, yeah,
it's so good.
I don't leave away the Luxardo and everything.
Yeah,
I
just I'm sorry for everybody that can't get chartreuse right now. But if you can, have mezcal.
Well, so here's my question.
Just only mezcal.
So you're a chef. Mm-hmm. You're a trained chef. And I'm going to give you the benefit of doubt that you have a pretty well-trained palate.
Yeah.
Don't you think, like, with a dish, right, you could taste somebody else's dish, not knowing the ingredients, and have a pretty good idea, like, how you could recreate it, right?
Yeah, that's pretty fun. And when I don't, I'm never afraid to, like, ask or be that person. You
right,
know what
but
I mean?
As it pertains to chartreuse, so I know it's an ancient recipe and it's been kept in secret, but can't somebody, like, taste it and think about, like, okay, I can recreate this, or I can figure out how to get these flavors in a bottle.
I think they'll get pretty close, because there's, like, other companies that make, like, Fernet. You know, there's other places that, you know, you can kind of get those options, but you're still like, it's not it. So it's like Coca-Cola Classic versus the fucking Safeway product, right? You're like, it's soda. I think that's kind of the thing with chartreuse. You know, it's been around since 1600, so they're going to closely guard it, keep it, kind of whatever. There has to be some little...
Is there anything out there right now that rivals it in any way, like, that you could even...
I don't even think so.
Well, like, we have a menu, we have a drink on our menu right now that we use with Kinship, right? With the Durham Distillery, the new purple vodka or purple gin that they have, and we have chartreuse in it, but since we can't get it, we're like, well, so I'm flipping it and putting absinthe in the drink.
Okay.
And so that's not the same, but it gives it kind of that, you know,
the vibe,
licorice,
the vibe,
anise,
but what do you do for the sweetness part?
I mean, we just had to redo the drink. So, like,
are you just putting simple now? Or do you add simple?
Yeah,
to it?
We're doing it with mint, a mint simple, and a little bit of vermouth. It's just a drink that we're messing around with. But yeah, and then from what I understand too, and maybe this is just legend or so, but you know, with chartreuse, from what I remembered, chartreuse is also made in like four different monasteries, mm-hmm. right? So like, it's then blended at the end.
Yep.
And so if and each of those monks. Monasteries like have their own recipe, so they're each doing it separately and then blending it together, so it's virtually impossible to like
recreate it
like and it's almost like, you know, it's kind of like a I don't know what we watch Terminator 2 and you're getting into like the safe and they both have to turn the key at the same time. It's like, but they're doing it with four times, you know? It's like there's four keys to this puzzle that you all need to contribute. And as I'm reading right here, I won't read the whole story, but this is exactly what you were saying, Eric. In 2021, the decision was made from the Carthusian monks not to increase their volumes of production for chartreuse liquors. They're limiting production to focus on their primary goal, protect their monastic life and devote their time to solitude and prayer. So yeah, like that's their job, that's what their life is all about, not about making liquor for some bros that want to mix it with some mezcal.
Honestly though, the template of that email is what I'm sending to everybody forever until the end of time when I don't want to fucking do something.
Right,
I'm gonna be like, nope, I'm gonna make chartreuse and I'm a monk now, so deal with it. Deal with my lifestyle.
Boyfriend Eric the and, chef monk,
and that's it. They're like, that's fine. And I just send them clips from the show The Monk.
Oh yeah,
and that's it. And it's totally confusing to them.
They don't know
what's going on, but I'm like, don't even worry about it.
At least they're
it.
Not still bothering you about whatever it is they
exactly.
want you to do.
Wait, I'm like, Monk, like with Tony
that's such a good show. Such a good fucking incredible show.
And all you serve at your dinners is monk fruit.
Oh god damn it, this is so good.
Thank you.
Oh my god,
think tank session. All right, so maybe
monkeys,
Emily, Eric, why Raleigh? Why are you guys here?
I have a ton of guests who are here. I was in Seattle, so that's very tech heavy. And I got in, there's a really specific pocket of tech people I got in with, and it's video games.
Okay.
So I have a lot of guests and friends and stuff that work at Microsoft, and I have a lot of, you know, Take-Two, Valve, all this kind of stuff up in Seattle. Pokemon, and then the other one being Epic, right? So Epic has an office in Seattle, and they also have one over here, which is their main HQ. So when a lot of the people were like, hey, you know, Eric's going on tour, this kind of thing, they were passing it off on their Slack channel. So I was like their shit on the Slack channel for a little bit. And so everybody started booking and kind of doing that thing. So when I was coming out and going on my tour, I got a couple of messages from guests out here. And they're like, are you stopping through Raleigh? And I'm like, fuck no. Why the fuck do I go through Raleigh? You know what I mean? No, fuck.
Yeah, what's in Raleigh?
Are you insane?
Offense taken.
But once I like started to like look at it more, I'm like, holy shit, man, this is actually kind of cool. I like it because it reminds me a lot of Olympia where I grew up. And it has kind of the same temperature, it's claimed climate. A lot of people are really cool the same way. Like I set up a week and I said, hey, if you book this week, I'm out there. We'll divert and kind of go through Raleigh. It sold out in like 10 minutes. And then so then we were in Puerto Rico on the tour too. And we're sitting there. I was like, man, I still got all these people like emailing me and shit from Raleigh. Should I do this thing? So I put up a month that sold out in like 3 days.
That's amazing.
And so then I was like, you know, what else should we do after this tour? Like, where should we hang out? I don't want to go back to Seattle. LA is obscenely expensive. Holy fucking shit.
And we can't go to Puerto Rico.
We can't afford San Francisco. Like, you know, like all these places where you kind of wanted to go, like DC, holy shit, it's so expensive. Everything's really expensive. It's not like Raleigh's cheap.
But
it's not like it's not like it's run down, and there's not, it's not in a positive way. I'm like, man, this actually does feel like Seattle 7 to 10 years ago before Amazon dropped the bomb on everybody.
That's how I felt about, like, I'm from San Jose and with the Silicon Valley, this is this feels like San Jose circa 1995.
Cool.
It was a good time because it was like things were booming and hadn't completely grown up. I mean, now you can't even walk into San Jose, you know, like you're not even allowed in unless you're a millionaire. Like, you can't be there.
But. And it's you know, for us, I'm not walking into this Raleigh going like, this is my city, big fish, small pond, and I don't give a fuck about that. You know, like I have guests, they're cool. I want more guests. I want more people to check it out. But I'm the monk again. You know, I'm like, hey, let's make sure it's still cool.
Yeah.
You know, let's make sure it's still fun. Let's make sure the food is dope. Let's make sure people
protect
have a good time.
Protect your monastic integrity.
Yeah, because at that time, you know, I don't want to open up 7 restaurants. You know, I don't even want to open up barely a restaurant. I still want to keep kind of doing the shit I'm doing now.
But to keep the lights on, I mean, you have low overhead, obviously.
Yeah, oh my God,
there's two of you.
Two.
Yeah.
And then you're cooking for a small amount of people. Yes. So it's like, and actually this... mm-hmm. we'll segue into it. I'll get to it in a second. But like your sourcing and all of yeah. like what you're doing, like it's all limited, and you're not like really wasting any.
No.
I can't imagine you're throwing a lot of no. of product away.
No, mm-hmm. because I'm also on the back end, you know, kind of being this chef thing that I do. You know, I've got a lot of different ways to preserve things and ferment things. And
yeah. And you're not writing a menu where everyone expects this to come, like you're like, oh, shit, I need to buy X amount of chicken wings.
No.
You
know, right.
Because they all expect chicken wings. And then if like, you know.
If I ran out of chicken wings, there's a supply shortage.
Yeah.
I'm fucked.
Everyone's yeah. upset. Yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. It's nothing like that. And so like, that's why I even opened myself up on a template. You know, the way that I write a menu when you're coming and you're coming and you're coming, it's literally just a liter ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I'm on the fly doing whatever I want.
And that's even if you write the lead ingredient at first, yeah. you know, some like lately
sometimes
you
I
haven't
change.
Been writing menus.
No,
at
I haven't
all.
Written menus.
Yeah.
So I just go in my yeah. head and I count and I'll have like a tally mark on mm-hmm. a little yellow pad mm-hmm. and I'm like, that's how many courses they're
getting.
And I'll
just write little notes like, love
yeah.
you.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's really interesting because it's like for me, in restaurants, those bigger, crazy restaurants, you know, even if it's McDonald's to Alinea, it's like a musician playing sheet music.
Mm-hmm.
You're relegated. You're told exactly how to fit into the mold, blah, 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 blah. And I grew up, you know, playing music and everything else. And I'm like, this is improvisational jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I got mm-hmm. the time. I got the key. I've got however much, whatever we need to do to get by this little solo we're doing right here. And give me the beat and let's go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So where, how do you do your sourcing? You're new to Raleigh.
Yeah.
So how did you find what you want?
So,
I mean, is
yeah.
this just a Whole Foods run or
what
do you do?
It's actually, that's a really good question, man. I think that's the biggest thing that brought me here. Because it was so unexpected. I have some friends in South Carolina, you know, and I've been there. And I know the product over there is insane.
Yeah.
Produce, seafood, all that kind of stuff. I've been around again a bit more with traveling for business, for restaurants, and all that kind of stuff too. So I knew there was good pockets kind of everywhere. California is like top dog shit for me when it comes to product because you can get anything all the time. It's insane. But with here. You know, the state-run farmer's market, there's so much shit there.
You could just
get lost. And, and I did. And I did get lost. And I do get lost. And mm-hmm. I go there all the time. And,
even now.
You know, the Pork King people.
Yeah.
Like, then
They're
it's
great.
Earps, like, a minute away. And mm-hmm. that's all these extra things. And I'm like, you know, the times that I've actually done dinners here hasn't even been prime market. Mm-hmm. Season or types. The only time I was here where I was like, holy fucking shit, was a little bit towards summer where all these
August,
peppers.
September. Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, what? You know, mm-hmm. and you start to see a lot of that stuff and it starts to turn that thing in my head where I'm like, I can get anything here.
Have you ever tried to cook the alligator from Earps?
I have not, but I've had alligator before.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's good.
Tastes like
chicken. It's like chicken.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anytime somebody says it does taste like chicken, they overcook the shit out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need to fucking boil it to death or roast it to death
breast.
Or anything else.
No, dry it's actually, chicken breast.
I've had gator. I mean, I was in Louisiana, so sometimes you go.
So you've had some good gator.
I've had, and you're like, all right, man, let me try it. And I put that toad chachere on down and put that out. Good, huh? And you're like, wow. Wow, that's awesome, man. This is really fucking good. So yeah, I've had yeah.
I don't know what you're saying, but
it's that little Cajun kind of like, oh, yeah. Fuck, man. And that's one of
it
my
sounds
favorite.
Like an auctioneer
it's,
almost.
It's one of my favorite accents. Like when I first heard it, I was like, man, that is so fucking good.
Yeah.
It's adorable. I love it. And it's just, it's fun.
Are you, now that you're in this area, have you immersed yourself into like the food culture out here? Are you aware of it?
It's hard, man, because we've came in with kind of like full schedule.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. so I'm also kind of a shut-in, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I go out, but like with stuff that we do to go out, it's still even then isolated.
Yeah.
I've got this like crazy 4Runner where I go off the side of a mountain and shit with that thing. We go out in the middle of nowhere. Drive on the beach and fucking there's a pop-up clamshell tent on top, so I'm like, we'll just sleep here, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like I'm kind of a weirdo like that.
Sure.
I think the pandemic kind of did it to me even more so.
Yeah. it's just like
we don't really get out, you know. And, and like I want to check out places. I've heard some really cool places around here that I'm like, fuck, that sounds dope.
Yeah.
But again, it's just like the other problem with being a chef is you're Tuesday through Sunday kind of like occupied.
Mm-hmm.
And then most restaurants are closed on Monday
mm-hmm.
because the other chefs are off.
Yeah. And so it's like, you don't, it's pretty rare that you get a chance. So it's hard. That's one of the hardest things about it. Chicago had a really good community for that kind of thing. Cause just chefs would be like, we're doing a super turn late at night. Get your ass over here. And you're like, what? And it's mm-hmm. 1 o'clock in the morning. You're like eating a full tasting menu.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. Fucking soda. That's cool. But that's a later town. You know, I've seen here, it gets kind of quiet. Like again, very similar to like West Coast style,
yeah.
where everything kind of shuts down 8:30 or 9.
Yeah.
It gets kind of quiet.
Yeah.
10 o'clock, everybody's at home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
What? So what is the plan now? Are you still going out on tour, or you're going to stay in Raleigh for a while?
Yeah, we've have some dates for the tour. Mm-hmm. We'll be in New York City, Philly, D.C., San Francisco. I'm about to launch L.A., Puerto Rico as well for the next year.
Yeah. Is New York City sold out yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
No.
Not yet. Tell your friends.
Yeah.
Tell everybody.
So it's really cool. So we've got that thing.
Plug it for a second.
We've got a tour kind of in New York. We'll be there in May. All the way through the end of the year. It's on my site. It says auto tour. It's $125 a person.
That's ADDO tour.
ADDO tour, but it's on my site, ericriveracooks.com. And it's basically on there. It's $125 a person. I dropped the hammer on you guys. I'd use, a lot of the locale ingredients, local. And then I just kind of do my thing with them from the point of view of stuff from around the United States or around the world, and make it really unique and really fun. I kind of tell people, when I'm in your city, I'll be that restaurant for a couple of days and then I go away, and mm-hmm. then you can go have your kind of city fun times back. But mm-hmm. let me hang out for a little bit, do my little art installation, and I'll get out of your way. But no, it's really cool, because then we do that, and then next year we'll be going like San Miguel de Allende, Buenos Aires,
mm-hmm.
Hawaii,
Maui, I think,
Hawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah, all these kinds of places are cool, and we have people that fly out with us.
Yeah,
guests that will make it their trip or their thing, or they visit family and friends, like New York, holy shit, like there's tons of family and friends and people and whatever.
Absolutely.
Like, oh, that gives me an opportunity to go, so that I end up being like the control, of it, where they're like, this is the dinner I was talking about, see.
and it's
adorable, and it's
really fun.
That's the kind of shit that I like,
yeah,
because then it's like a continuation of their story. We have guests now here that we have a guest that are flying. Pokemon has an office down here.
Yeah.
They're in their main offices in Seattle, and then they also fly to Japan. So then I get a mix of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I get all these like, holy shit. And people are kind of flying into Raleigh, and they're coming and making trips and doing mm-hmm. all these things. I have people that are like driving from DC and making trips from New York and coming down this way. They're mm-hmm. like, well, I'll come see you. That's better than going to Seattle.
Good reason to come to Raleigh.
And then people from my little hometown of Dayton, Ohio are like, oh, I'll come visit.
You're a flyer?
Yep. Yeah.
Dayton Flyers.
I know.
Yeah.
Dayton
I went to those basketball games constantly when I was a kid. Constantly.
Yeah. Okay, so we talked a little off mic.
Yeah, and then, sorry, restaurant, right? So I was kind of working towards a restaurant. We'll kind of see how that happens. It's not like I don't want to. I just keep having this really like weird moment where I see economy and financial stuff kind of going crazy. And again, I went through that years ago.
Yeah.
And just like a couple years ago too.
And then just with pandemic stuff too, I had restaurant, and then you kind of see this thing that you can't control or you can't do anything with. And restaurant is one of those things. It's mm-hmm. dependent on healthy people actually coming to your fucking restaurant,
right?
Financially or with their health.
Yeah.
Right. And if they don't have that, they're not coming to your restaurant. So what happens? Mm-hmm. You close. And that can happen overnight, and I've seen it happen overnight. I've had friends and I've seen it 1,000 different ways. I don't want to do a bunch of fundraising or even put my own money or anything else and be like, fuck, I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
When I have this other thing that's going on, we're doing dinners and people are happy and they're excited, why don't you do that for a little bit?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So ideally, if a restaurant pops out of nowhere and it works, oh yeah, no brainer, right?
What if like a major culinary institution or a big name chef is like, hey, would you come help me out and be my exec at 0%. Said restaurant?
I don't fucking work for anybody.
Okay.
Yeah. That's my, you hear my dark voice point there.
Yeah.
I don't fucking work for
really
anybody.
Yeah. There,
no,
yeah.
I don't have any base here.
would you
all about that trouble. No base, no trouble.
Would you do some collaborations though? With
collaborations
with the chef?
Are fine. Yeah. I mean, we were in Nashville. We did one
with Sean. Yeah.
He's so fucking
he's
nice.
He's so sweet.
And his restaurant
and
is
so Davis,
bespoke.
And so is everybody there.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, everything.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
And he's got the
it's
Continental
beautiful.
And everything. And like everything, man, all the stuff he's got going on in Nashville. If you haven't had a chance, go see him.
Yeah.
And he's fucking awesome.
Preservationalist mentality uh-huh. is so cool. Like, he is keeping like the flavors of the South alive.
Yeah. And like the Appalachian flavors. And it's just, it's
but
really
even
cool.
All, I always say this every time I'm talking about it, and I take all of that away, even him being chef, the fucking coolest dude. He's
he is.
So
and
sweet.
His guitar collection is fucking.
Yeah,
so
and he's just
good.
so good.
I know. Yeah, they're
amazing.
Yeah,
and the way he talks about his kids and everything else, and people, and he's trying to like do all these health and wellness things.
He's
lovely. Like, it's too much. I'm like, man, you're like
he's like a big teddy bear that you just love.
Yeah.
He's great.
So stuff like that, and then any other chefs. Yeah. Again, if it makes sense and it's cool and it works for everybody, but I don't want to just do things to do them either. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just be like the big food wine festival kind of crazy shit. I've done, oh my God, kill me.
Yeah.
You know, the thousands of them, the Aspen Food and Wines, LA Food and Wines, Hawaii Food and Wines, mm-hmm. New York, all these.
Bubbles and Brisket.
I've done all of that shit. I've done the stadium ones in Seattle where they're like, we're going to have 10,000 people and it's brunch and fucking mimosas. And I'm like,
is that your Regis Philbin, by the way?
Kind of, sort of, yeah.
It's pretty good, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good Regis, yeah.
So it's like, what was his sidekick when they were growing up?
Who?
It was Regis and
Kathy Lee.
Kathy Lee. Yeah, Kathy Lee Gifford.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's awesome. No, what a trip.
I just looked at my wife the other day. We were watching something with Kathy Lee on, and Kathy Lee is, I mean, what? She's got to be 80, right?
Like, she's probably 70s, 60s, 70s. Yeah, I think 70s.
We'll fight, but
no, it's not funny.
She's in that age grade.
Yeah.
And she has had so much work, and then her hair and everything. But
69, you guys.
She's only 69.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
Married, of course, to Frank Gifford, famous New York Giant.
Yeah, amazing.
But I'm like, I looked at Felicia and I go, so is this just the way it's going to be now? A 69-year-old woman's just going to dress like an 18-year-old girl? Like,
yeah.
Because she had she was wearing exactly what you're wearing, Emily. Like, and I'm like,
I could be 69. You don't
Kathy
know.
Kathy Lee, come on. Yeah, that's true.
Nice.
I mean, I'm going to be wearing this fucking stuff when I'm 69.
Well,
I'm going to be hot when I'm 69. If I'm hot,
I'll put it this way.
I guarantee it. That's my point.
It's always kind of a thing.
It's happening right
now. If you got it, flaunt it. But
absolutely.
Even if you don't, you want to flaunt it, flaunt
it. Absolutely.
Like, that's kind of thing.
My tits will be sagging down my knees, and I'll be wearing this fucking shirt all the time. Flawless. See them. Look at my nipple piercings. I'm 85 years old.
Yeah, I dress like I'm colorblind. You know what I mean? Look at me.
I mean, I guess I kind of,
I get people all the time. They're like, that's so cool color, and I fuck with them. I'm like, I'm colorblind.
It's color.
No, but it's I don't give a shit. I mean, that's the thing with chefs. Okay, so kind of going into that with like how chefs are supposed to look or see or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I've had tons of people look at me and go, I'm like, okay, so where's the chef? I'm literally the person right there.
Yeah,
you know, and it's like long hair and fucking weird. I mean, I didn't get tattoos until this last year, so it's like. It's like looking at all that stuff. It's like, who is this person? What's that thing? And and you never know. Mm-hmm. I've had chefs that wear the white jacket and look cool as shit. And it's the most garbage food I've ever had.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you the tough question.
Yeah,
so let's say one of your regulars or somebody hypothetically who you've cooked for before be like, man, I've had this dish before. Mm-hmm. I've had this dish before. Can you cook me your hits?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll pay you double your regular.
I've had a couple people that like a thing.
Yeah.
But I tell them, it's like, I'm not writing anything down.
Mm-hmm.
You had your like menuette ado. It's, am I pronouncing it right?
Auto.
Auto.
Like
sorry.
Automobile. No, it's all good.
Yeah. So you had your menu there, right? Like
it was always different.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Same.
Because like they wrote about the cacio plantains or
yeah, that's a one-off thing I did for Food and Wine.
Okay.
You know, like it is so crazy because then I just like we were talking earlier about the Hebrewito.
Yeah.
Like I'm fucking literally if I ever make you fucking you're in my little knife kill area.
Yeah.
You're getting that fucking thing.
Nice.
You know, so that's the kind of way I think about it because I want to make it cool. I want to make it special. I want to make it unique. But I want to make it just about you because if you have a conversation with her, him, anybody else, hey, how's the food? Did you have this? They're going to be like, what? No.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, did you have this thing? No.
Yeah.
No. And then you ask me, and I'm like, I forgot.
Right. Like the other night, you forget like the three dishes that you made.
Yeah.
And it's just like you have all this stuff.
I don't know.
That
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No fucking idea.
What
all
about
all kinds of stuff that you come up with?
Oh, I was just kind of wrapping it up a little bit. But you crafted yourself into a pretty cool area. You've got that mentality, you know, like it's the, you know, you don't have to outrun the bear, you just have to outrun your friend mentality. Because you don't need to be anything to anybody.
Mm-mm.
You don't need to sell out a huge place. You don't need to like worry about cover counts and ticket prices and all that. Like you're insulated in that. If you're only going to cook for 3 to 4 to maybe 10 people, then fine. That's great. And then if you want to take a day off, you'll do that. And you're in control of your own destiny. You put all the work in and you are talented so that you could do that.
Yeah.
You could. I mean, I'm saying this to like some young chefs out there like, oh, shit, I'll just do that. It's like, well, you kind of have to build up some loyalty and some trust and have a clientele base. And you do that.
If you have 5 or 6 banging dishes, there's people out there that have made entire careers off of that.
Right. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that shit. But this is a whole different monster. You know, this is a whole different thing, because not only we're talking chartreuse, you're talking wine, we're talking coffee, we're talking, you have to know all this shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you can't bullshit it, because I have a guy that's right in front of me that sells wine and wine to everybody. You can't bullshit the wine guy. You can't bullshit the coffee guy. You can't bullshit the bartender. You can't bullshit, you know, epidemiologist.
Well, I know about COVID because I went on Reddit and I found this thing. They're like,
kill
no, fuck
me.
You, man. You know, so it's like, you can't, that's the thing really at the end of the day that I think I get away with it.
Everything that I do is because the food's decent. It's good. It's great.
What style of food is are you least familiar with?
I want to get more into food from Ghana. That style?
Yeah. I was going to do that, but I didn't.
Ah, nice. Ring the bell. I only get the bell.
Food from Ghana is sick. From Ghana. Mm-hmm. Man, like, every time we talk about food with someone from there, and like my guest or whoever else, it sounds cool as shit. And I'm Puerto Rican, and it's that same vibe. Mm. Like, we have that same excitement for it. It's like everything kind of stops. It's like, what are we eating? What are we eating again? What are we doing this? And it's like, centered food thing. Great. Awesome. That's a thing. More regionalized Indian food.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's really a thing, because I have a lot of guests also that are Indian.
Yeah, because Indian food is vast.
When people say wherever. Indian food, you're like not even like scraping the surface.
Yeah. Like food.
Yeah.
It's so generic.
Because I've had guests who've brought me ingredients, spices, mangoes, and kind of show me the more of a spectrum.
Yeah.
I have a guest that, like, her dad is an olive oil farmer and makes his own thing, but then also has mangoes on the property, and they have like 40 something mangoes. And she's just like, Eric, you have no fucking idea. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's badass.
Yeah.
That's the kind of stuff that I like so much. Yeah. You know, it's like when people say Chinese food, I'm like, what style? And they look at me like, well, you know, the sweet and sour pork orange chicken thing.
33.
And I'm like, nah, man, that's part of it, but that's not it.
Right.
You know, there's way more crazy shit, cool stuff, and way more things to see and understand and cook from. And I think that's like going back to the thing of like the Puerto Rican dim sum thing I did the other night. It was really taking on like Hunan style, Sichuan style, and then Hong Kong style, like styles of dim sums and flavors, and putting them all packaging up, but also being like predominantly Puerto Rican flavors. So when you look at it, it looks like this thing. When you eat it, you're like, fuck. And then it has these notes and trails on it, and you package it all together. By the time the person's done, they just had dim sum in an area that doesn't really have dim sum.
Yeah.
With Chinese flavors, Puerto Rican flavors on top of that, in an intimate and unique place. And I'm like, it's not even on a menu. You can't even book this.
Yeah.
It sounds a little, not to the extent, but so I do this thing where I saw him at a supper club at Pimento Tea Room. I'll give myself a shameless plug. It's the last Monday of every month, but they're usually, no hyperbole, not because of me, sell out like within not as quick
no,
as you do,
it.
Within a week.
That's great.
Yeah, despite me, they sell out.
Come on, man, give yourself some credit. Shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. I do pair really nice
wines.
Yeah,
good.
Though,
that's what I'm saying. You're part of the reason.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So
you know?
So she'll cook like a. She'll say Indian style, but she'll do like her traditional, like, you know, your tikka masalas or whatever, or she'll do like French food, but with all of a Southern twist on it. So she'll use Southern ingredients.
God, it's brilliant.
You guys would have a great time there.
That.
I think
yeah.
you would really enjoy
that
it.
Sounds awesome.
It's this old house that's in downtown Holly Springs.
Oh,
it's
cool.
Like crazy, but,
I love it, man.
It's cool. Yeah. And it's for a great cause.
For sure.
It's good to have you in this community. I like that, you know, we've talked about the expanse of this community. There's a lot of chefs that have kind of come up from here, but then there are a few chefs that have come from outside. There's these carpetbaggers like Matt Knight that have come from outskirts, and now yourself. The great article that pissed off everybody, that it was like, oh, the carpetbaggers are coming. They're coming to get your money, everybody.
Oh, my God.
But we're all here, but I think it's great that you're now in town and that you can. That would be my only request is do some collaborations with the area. Let people that are not just the private diners that have like a huge bankroll be the only people that get to try your food.
Yeah.
Like, do some collaborations, do some things here and there so that people get to understand who Eric Rivera is in a broader sense. But,
Man, that's really good advice, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, it's kind of a thing. It's I want to cook for people, man.
Yeah.
And that's really it at the end of the day. So it's fun. And again, if it's cool, it's good, and it's something different, then even better.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome. Well, guys, thank you. It's great to meet you.
Yeah, thank you.
And I love what you're doing.
Thank you.
And so for everybody else out there, I'm telling you right now, go check this guy out. It's ericriveracooks.com.
Yes.
Go book yourself into one of his private dining dinners.
Excursions, extravaganzas,
concerts, and you will eat and drink extremely merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.